A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me today. We're going to be talking with Dr. Robert Young, head of Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership, here in just a minute or two. Some big news that you might not have heard about, because the mainstream media doesn't seem all that interested in covering it, but a medical association comprised of ear, nose, and throat doctors. I won't give you the technical name for ear, nose, and throat doctors because, boy, I can't pronounce it. But as you will see during our conversation with Dr. Robert Young. Anyway, this group of ear, nose, and throat doctors coming out in support of the use of suppressors to help save gun owners' hearing. And, of course, you know, with the incoming Congress, Republican majorities, Donald Trump in the White House, hopes are high. I don't know about expectations, but hopes are certainly high that legislation like the Hearing Protection Act will get to Donald Trump's desk, will become law, and that the use of suppressors and the sale of suppressors, actually suppressors themselves, would be delisted from the National Firearms Act. Now, I mean, we've already seen a really amazing growth in the number of suppressors that are lawfully owned. Even with having to pay the $200 tax stamp, even with all of the NFA restrictions, it's estimated there are more than 5 million suppressors in the hands of legal gun owners. Again, they're not generally used in crime, but we did see that high-profile shooting of the UnitedHealthcare CEO, in which the suspect is believed to have been used a suppressor, home-built, I guess, which is going to make the debate over the Hearing Protection Act, I suspect, pretty vigorous, right? The media, and of course, the anti-gunner is going to glom onto this shooting as evidence that suppressors should not be available for anyone, even though, again, if what police are alleging is true, this wasn't a lawfully purchased suppressor to begin with. So if criminals are making their own, why should we have to jump through so many hoops and hurdles to purchase one legally? Now, I will say that this academy did not get into the politics of suppressors. They didn't endorse the Hearing Protection Act, but they did talk about what benefits suppressors provide to gun owners themselves. So let's talk about it again with Dr. Robert Young from Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership. Take a look and a listen. Robert, it's good to see you again. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Happy to be with you always, Cam.
And, you know, I know it's been a couple of weeks. We didn't have a chance to cover this at the time, but this is actually really important and good news. The American Academy of Otolaryngology. You're going to have to help me out. Those otolaryngology. How do you pronounce that, Rob?
Otolaryngology.
Okay. Head and neck surgery. The American Academy of of what Rob just said, head and neck surgery, has come out with a position paper in support of the use of suppressors for hearing preservation. This is a big change, right?
This is huge. Not for our hopes of seeing suppressors treated as they should be, which is as a very important accessory for health. But also as a first way in to organized medicine, I think, to see it start to think rationally about guns and gun usage. Yes, huge, huge news.
I'm looking here at their position paper. They say sound suppressors are mechanical devices attached to the barrel of a firearm designed to reduce harmful impulse noise of firearms at its source. They say CDC research has shown that, quote, the only potentially effective noise control method to reduce the shooter's noise exposure from gunfire is through the use of noise suppressors that can be attached to the end of the gun barrel. They note suppressors reduce muzzle blast noise by up to 30 decibels. The benefit, they say, is additive when used with ear-level hearing protection devices, such as circumaural muffs or earplugs. And they say that they endorse the use of firearm suppressors as an effective method of reducing the risk of hearing loss, especially when used in conjunction with conventional hearing protective measures. And as you say, you know, this, we can talk about this all day long as gun owners, and we can talk about this all day long as Second Amendment advocates. And we can say, look, in Europe, suppressors are in many places just completely normal, right? They are, in fact, encouraged.
But you can buy them over the counter.
Right. But
Period.
this, you know, there is that the argument by authority and the argument from authority, I think, is a very real phenomenon. So when you have a group of medical professionals come out and say, yes, this is a good idea to help reduce hearing loss among shooters, I think it does lend additional weight to this argument.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. This, they, some members of Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership, that's my group, of course, drgo.us, decided to take a bit more roundabout route than we tried as an organization in 2016. As a few of our viewers may remember, the Hearing Protection Act of 2016 was proposed, which would have normalized the management of suppressors, i.e. delisted them as from the NFA and allowed them to be readily available. Unfortunately, that went nowhere. But at that time, DRGO wanted to do all that we could to support it. And we got with a number of our ENT colleagues in DRGO, pulled together all the important research about it, and we wrote up a position paper, which is available still on our website, documenting all the science behind the need to do everything in our power to reduce hearing damage from shooting, which has become well known as a very serious problem in the health of shooters. People like me, who started shooting around 1970 with my first rifle. And back then, we thought nothing of shooting without any hearing protection. No earmuffs, no plugs, let alone the idea of suppressors, which at that time, 30-some years after they had been made difficult to get, we just didn't even think about it. $200 was a lot more then, let alone the weight than it is now. So we put this together, and it still stands as an excellent summary of the science, written, if I may say so myself, in a way that's very understandable. And we tried hard to distribute that to members of Congress and such. We just couldn't get it heard. So, to continue this longer version of the story, which you gave us the important part, the outcome, the same members, many of them, led by our founder, Dr. Tim Wheeler, a retired ENT now in California, decided simply to work within their specialty organization without reference to anything as politicized as Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership. And they worked through the process that all specialty organizations have to submit a proposal for consideration for the recommendation that you just read. Entirely based on health reasons, nothing else. Now, any ENT, just like any rational physician, already knows these facts. And fortunately, the ENTs in the process were rational about it. You submit a proposal to whatever committee of the governing body is, say it's a usually there is a an elected assembly of some kind to consider these things. So you submit it to a committee. The committee can recommend it, amend it, refuse it. If they recommend it, it goes on to the assembly, for example. If they then approve it at large, then it goes, typically, I'm thinking about my own specialty, the American Psychiatric Association. I don't know exactly what the ENTs do, but it's got to be similar. So then it goes to the board of directors of the group. If they approve it, Typically, that's the last step. So this is a long, careful process. And they've succeeded.
They have succeeded.
Right. So as you point out, now that we have the specialty organization most concerned with hearing, most expert on the mechanisms of hearing, getting behind this, we have organized medicine behind something that is a huge need by the shooting community, and no one can contradict them. That's the advantage now.
Yeah.
So if and when it comes up as potential legislation to ease the process and the cost of getting suppressors for rifles and handguns, I think it stands a much better chance of getting through and not allowing the anti-gun crowd to make false claims and get away with it.
Right. And I mean, and listen, I mean, we've heard a number of false claims, right? That this completely silences a gun so that, you know, it enables all kinds of criminal activity. And of course, you know, Rob, we've seen this very high profile shooting of the United Healthcare CEO. The individual in question apparently using a home built gun with a suppressor. We haven't heard much about the suppressor that was used, whether that too was home built. But again, we know that, you know, these reduce the sound level, right, by about 30 decibels.
Right.
You can still hear a suppressed firearm, right? I mean, I suppose if you're using subsonic rounds, you know, it's possible to like lower that even further, but it's not the that you see in James Bond movies, right? That's not the Hollywood version of suppressors is not what suppressors are all about. And frankly, this is going to be even more important going forward because we have seen this high profile shooting involving somebody who used a suppressor. Mm-hmm. The anti-gunners are going to point to that and say, look, this is why we can't have the Hearing Protection Act.
Right.
But again, we don't stop law abiding people from doing lawful things because of the actions of a criminal or criminals. Right. If that was the case, the Supreme Court probably would have said, hey, you know what? Handguns can be banned. Because well, they're the weapon of choice for criminals, right?
Well, most of us wouldn't stop law-abiding people from doing safe things, no. But there are those who like doing that for some reason.
Yeah.
This, the presumed alleged killer of the executive in New York City, apparently, from news reports now, apparently we know that he was using a homemade gun, a quote, ghost gun. The only report I've read so far that says anything about the provenance of the suppressor he used is that he made it also.
Okay.
Which is, as many people know, of course, far simpler than building a gun from scratch. It's simply a small muffler. That's it. In fact, the guy who invented mufflers named Maxim, also of a rapidly repeating military rifle, almost simultaneously invented suppressors because it was clearly the same idea for the same purpose. So, but there you can get an oil filter, shoot through it, and it'll muffle the sound of a gunshot. So getting a suppressor is no big deal. Yes, they will try to make hay out of that. At the same time, whether the bystanders saw the gun or heard the first shot, you saw him jump and run. We say that the sound of a suppressed rifle shot, say, is still as loud as one crack of a jackhammer. Mm-hmm. Of a backfire of a car. So, yeah, you'll believe me, you'll know it when you hear it.
Right. Again, this is something that is helpful to shooters in reducing hearing damage by reducing that sound level, but it doesn't eliminate it completely. Mm-hmm. And the facts matter, right? Particularly if we are going to push for the Hearing Protection Act, we need to counter the fictions with facts. Yes. And I am glad that we now have this position paper from the Academy To help us do that. And again, thank you to Doctors for Responsible Gun Owners, going back to Dr. Tim Wheeler and all of the work that you all have done, not just on this issue, but I mean, honestly, Rob, in helping to, you know, again, provide that counter to this idea that that gun control and public health or gun control and medicine go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. You know, it is so good to have a group of physicians and medical professionals who discount that notion and show that there is a, you know, there are plenty of viable alternatives. There are ways to improve individual health. There are ways to improve public health without sacrificing our fundamental civil rights.
Right, right. For what it's worth, we will have a an article by Hayes Wanamaker, another one of the ENTs who pushed this through their organization. He is a relatively new but very active member of ours, and has agreed to become our associate director. So you'll see that on our website very shortly.
That is great.
Along with a reference to this interview and a number of others. Everyone involved has been doing media just about constantly these last 2 weeks, because it's such big news for the 2A community.
Yeah.
We're still waiting to see the mainstream media pick up this very important public health goal. I don't think they can avoid it forever, but they're doing a pretty good job of it now. However, I'm convinced by now that everyone who would benefit by it probably has heard about it because of the great, great coverage that people like you and many other Second Amendment sympathetic reporters have been doing. Thank you for that, Ken.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you know, again, we're talking about suppressing but not eliminating noise. The mainstream media can suppress this information, but they can't eliminate it from getting out completely. And again, that is because of, you know, a lot of great 2A reporters and, of course, the work of Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership. So, Rob, again, I really appreciate you coming on the program today. I look forward to seeing you again. If not before the new year, then certainly in the new year. And I wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas and happy holidays.
And you, Cam. Absolutely.
Thank you very much, sir. We'll talk to you soon. My thanks to Dr. Young for joining us on the program. Looking forward to having him back again here very soon. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Michigan, where a Saginaw man has received jail time and probation for severing a coworker's spine in a shooting at a marijuana grow site. Yeah. According to the, I guess this is from MLive, 52-year-old Owen Pipkins, on Monday afternoon, appeared before Saginaw County Circuit Judge Darnell Jackson for sentencing. He pled no contest back in October to assault with intent to do great bodily harm. That charge is a 10-year felony. And in exchange for pleading no contest, now again, he did not plead guilty, right? He just admitted that, prosecutors probably enough to convict me, but he did not assert his guilt. He still maintains his innocence. But prosecutors, in exchange for that plea, dismissed charges of assault with intent to murder, as well as felony firearm charge. Now, assault with intent to murder is punishable by up to life in prison. Felony firearm is this weird law in Michigan that basically says if you have a gun in connection with any other crime, even if it's a nonviolent crime, I believe, as long as it's a felony offense, then it's a minimum 2-year sentence. Those charges, again, dismissed. And after he pled no contest to assault with intent to do great bodily harm, which, by the way, carries a potential 10-year sentence, the judge sentenced Pipkins to just 1 year in jail with credit for 183 days served, time off for good behavior. He's probably going to be out in a matter of weeks, maybe a month or two. After he gets released from jail, he is on supervised probation for 3 years. And that's it. Which is pretty amazing. According to police, they responded to a shooting at a commercial building back on June the 10th. Pipkins actually was the one to call 911 to report that he had shot 42-year-old Jerry Bryant. The building housed a marijuana grow operation owned by several people in partnership. There were two beds at the site, which apparently Pipkins and Bryant slept in. When Pipkin was taken to police headquarters, he waived his Miranda rights, agreed to speak with police. He told them that he and Bryant worked together and lived at that building on Niagara Street in Saginaw. He said that, in previous altercations, Bryant had uttered slurs, had actually come at him with a shovel at one point. And on the morning of June the 10th, Pipkin said he was sleeping face down in a boat at the location when Bryant came in yelling and screaming. Police said that he advised that Bryant was calling him lazy and used a racial slur. Bryant white, Pipkins is black. Bryant grabbed the side of the boat, and that's when Pipkin said he fired a handgun one time, kind of shooting blindly. Pipkin did not indicate that Bryant had a weapon, had not indicated that there was any genuine threat to his life at that point. In fact, wasn't being particularly violent at the time. The bullet struck Bryant in his chest. Pipkins first called one of the men who owns the marijuana grow operation, and then he called 911. As the pair were waiting for police to arrive, Bryant told Pipkin that he could not feel his legs. Bryant had to be resuscitated by hospital staff. The bullet severed his spinal cord. So again, serious lifelong injuries suffered here. But despite, I mean, I thought maybe there would be a reasonable belief that this was a self-defense shooting. Doesn't sound like that was the case at all. So I confess I am flummoxed as to why Owen Pipkins got such a slap on the wrist, unless maybe it was that, I mean, my only thinking is that maybe prosecutors just thought, well, you know, two guys involved in growing marijuana, not much of a dispute here, right? Not really all that important in the grand scheme of things. I don't know. But otherwise, it's just bizarre that somebody who, again, shot a man, not really in self-defense, permanently injuring him, would get away with less than a year behind bars for that crime, when he was originally eligible for life in prison. All right, moving on to today's armed citizen story. From Baltimore, Maryland, where police say a 17-year-old was shot and killed by a man in self-defense. Now, this was not a recent shooting. It happened back on October the 8th, but police have just now wrapped up their investigation. It was about 2:15 in the morning on October the 8th. Baltimore police officer was flagged down by a citizen on Boston Street who told the officer that he had been shot. Medics responded to the location. They took the 31-year-old to a hospital for treatment. And then about 7 minutes after the guy had flagged down the officer and said, hey, I've been shot, officers responded to the 1200 block of South Haven Street for a reported shooting where they found a 17-year-old suffering from a gunshot wound. He was taken to a local hospital where he passed away on October the 12th. A preliminary investigation revealed that both the teen and the man were shot on South Haven Street. Homicide detectives were notified. But this week, officials said the 31-year-old man shot the teen in an act of self-defense, ruling the shooting justified. Having said, if the individual who, again, was justified in shooting his attacker possessed a concealed carry license, of course, you know, before the Bruin decision a couple of years ago, very, very few people in Baltimore, Maryland had a carry license because Maryland was a may-issue state, and you had to show a specific need to carry a firearm for self-defense. Living in Baltimore, Maryland, which at the time had more than 300 homicides every year, that wasn't a good enough reason, right? I live in a bad neighborhood in a dangerous city. Nah, not enough reason to be able to exercise your Second Amendment rights. That's all changed, and the number of concealed carry holders in Baltimore and the state of Maryland has grown exponentially over the past couple of years. But again, Baltimore police not saying officially whether or not this individual did possess a valid carry license. Finally today, our good deed of the day. In the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A police officer in Georgia who is being called a hero after rescuing his fiance from a blaze that left him with severe burns to more than 20% of his body. This is a just absolutely horrific picture of Lieutenant Robert Malam, a police officer at Kennesaw State University in Cartersville, Georgia, after he saved the life of his fiance. He woke up in the middle of the night, said he heard the sound of crackling flames. Initially, he didn't know what it was. He just kind of dismissed it because, you know, you wake up, you're asleep, you hear the noise. But he said, no, there were flames that were consuming his home. He said, in one of the corners, there were flames going up from the floor to the ceiling. He thinks it started in the rec room, but it quickly surrounded Milam, blocking the exit, trapping his fiance Misty behind the flames. And he said he ran through the blaze to rescue her. He said, I didn't really think about anything other than what I had to do. And that was get her out of there. At one point, Milam, as you saw, was completely covered in gauze and wrapping because of the burns on his head, back, and limbs. He has undergone multiple surgeries. He faces a very lengthy recovery. But he says his family, his fiance Misty's family, and his fellow officers have been helping him. He says, it makes me feel like I'm more liked than what I thought I was. The fire did destroy the home. All of the Christmas presents that were under the tree lost. Milam's pets are still missing. But he says that he is still focused on the positive. He says, I'm not sure I've ever felt this much love and support. He is hoping to return to work with the Kennesaw State University Police after one final surgery next week. And again, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a loved one. Robert Milam, there in Cartersville, Georgia. Today's hero of the day. Now, that's going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program, as always. And I want to thank you for all of your support that you've been giving me and Miss E over the past week, or, well, more than the past week. Honestly, for 8 years, the support that you've been giving Miss E and myself. I would ask again that you keep those thoughts and prayers coming, because they are definitely appreciated and most certainly needed at this point in time. So we will be back on Monday. Fingers crossed. And be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the weekend for all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Until we speak again, be well, be safe, and be free.